seems like it was just yesterday that the Carolina Hurricanes took a 2-0 lead over the Rangers. Oh, wait, it was yesterday, and it's a quick turnaround for Carolina tonight facing the Rangers, 8 o'clock, Fox Sports Carolina's NBC Sports Network. One of my favorite 30 for 30s. This reminds me of that. 4 days in October, about the Red Sox coming back against the Yankees down 3-0. And on the first night, Kevin Millar, he's walking around to anybody who will listen saying, hey, if you want to take us out of our misery, if you want to beat us tonight. But I'll tell you one thing, Yankees, don't let us win this game. No. Don't let us win this game. See, Canes fans, they're confident right now, and they should be. You're up 2-0. You're on the brink of eliminating New York. But this isn't the same as a 3-0 series, and things can turn around fast. So Carolina, you need to have the urgency tonight. This is the Hurricanes' best opportunity to close out the series. Because New York, they're on the ropes right now. They're not returning to home ice the way you would after 2 games in a regular series. So it's going to be the same environment. No fans. They're down 0-2. Body language, it's going to be as bad as it's been. Carolina's body language, I'm sure, is going to be at an all-time high, riding high, after the 2 wins. But that doesn't mean it's not a grind. Heck, a good friend of mine, Canes rep Mike Sundheim, who's up there in Toronto, he texted me earlier today saying that it's been a grind, man. Going to be a grind as we're trying to enjoy ourselves up here. And again, he's with the team that's winning right now. Imagine what New York's going through. Imagine what they're thinking. They're missing their families. They don't have any fans here. It's weird. It's unlike anything they've dealt with. And now you got to play back-to-back nights. Knock them out. Sweep the leg. Put your foot on their neck. Robert, how many more expressions can I come up with that essentially say the same exact thing?
I don't know. You have any more?
Knockout punch.
That's one more?
I don't have anything else.
Take them to the deepest part of the pool and drown them?
Okay, maybe that's a little far. That's a little graphic, Robert. It is a quick turnaround, though. Robert is the producer of this show. If you want in on Canes Rangers, 336-777-1600 on Twitter, at SportsHubDryad. John Forsling going to join us at the bottom of the hour. It's less than 30 hours after the final horn sounded yesterday that tonight's game will take place. Strong possibility of carryover. The Canes are great in the second period. They were awesome in the third. If that carries over and Carolina is great again right out of the gate, New York, they might just be looking to get back home. They might be ready to get back to their summer plans, whatever they've been doing before they started quarantining in Toronto. Plus, there's a different goaltender possibility. This is what I want to ask John about. There's a chance New York might try to spark something by playing Georgiev, the backup. Not as good as Henrik Lundqvist, I don't think. Henrik Lundqvist is a former All-Star, and he's a future Hall of Famer. So if it's Georgiev, you're talking about a rusty, worse version of Henrik Lundqvist that you could take advantage of. If it's Bond villain Igor Shesterkin, well, that's a goalie that's not 100%. Somebody else you need to jump on immediately. And yes, Robert, that is his real name, Igor Shesterkin. Can you sound more like a Bond villain?
Not on the spot. Maybe if I had time to practice. Where is he from?
Igor Shesterkin?
Yeah.
Where do you think he's from?
I'm guessing Europe, but I didn't know.
He is from Moscow.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I don't think that name could sound more Russian if you tried. Igor Shesterkin. So yeah, it could be him, it could be Georgiev, it could be Henrik Lundqvist again. Regardless who it is, Carolina, it's the golden opportunity for them tonight to knock out the Rangers, to end it tonight. If it doesn't end tonight, Hurricanes fans, you could start feeling nervous. That's not the only big game tonight, though. I was surprised that David Griffin finally let Zion Williamson go. It's amazing what can happen if you let your best player play, or arguably your most talented player play. Zion, he attempted more shots last night than any of the other 20 NBA games he's played in. He attempted more shots, 21, than all but one game of his 33-game career at Duke, and the Pelicans beat current 8-seed Memphis. So right now, they sit 3.5 games back where they were 3 games ago. Portland, meanwhile, is 1-1 through their first 2 games. Tonight, they have the Houston Rockets. I think the fate of the Pelicans hangs in tonight's game. If Portland wins, if Portland beats Houston tonight, I think it's going to be too tall of a mountain to climb for Zion and the Pelicans, regardless of how well they play. If the Blazers win, they're going to have a full game up on New Orleans. And if you're thinking, Josh, that's not that big of a mountain to climb, what are you talking about? You're overreacting, you're oversensationalizing things. There's 5 games left. Portland has the tiebreaker over New Orleans. So not only do the Pelicans have to make up one game, they have to make up two. They got to make up 2 games in 5. And that Portland team, they're healthy now. They got Nurkic. They got Zach Collins. Gary Trent Jr. is shooting a hot basketball right now. They have that lineup with Trent Jr., Dame, and CJ on the floor at the same time. But if Portland loses tonight, that's where the Pelicans will have a chance. The Pelicans, they have a cake schedule. I'm looking at the Pelicans the rest of the way. I think they could go 4-1 or 5-0, Robert. You tell me where the loss is. New Orleans has Sacramento, Washington, Spurs, Sacramento, and the Orlando Magic. Those 5 teams, only one of those teams currently in the playoffs. And that's Orlando. And that game also happens to be the last game on the slate, which means Orlando probably isn't going to play all their guys wanting to rest up and get things ready to go for their postseason series. So I think that's an advantage that New Orleans has in that game. Meanwhile, Portland. Houston's a pretty damn good team. We could agree on that. But after that, it's Denver, the Clippers, 76ers, Dallas, and the Brooklyn Nets. All 5 of those teams are currently in playoff position. So the schedules are essentially flipped. Portland's schedule, incredibly tough. The Pelicans' schedule, not so much. But I don't think the Pelicans will be able to make up 2 games with only 5 to go on Portland, considering how well they're playing right now. Also, Portland having a lot more urgency than many of those teams that they're going to be playing, even though those teams are pretty talented. So I'm going to keep a close eye on that tonight on Twitter. Again, at SportsHubTryon, if you would like to chime in that way. It is a vast NBA slate later on tonight, and I still haven't gotten adjusted to sports happening at noon where you have the Brooklyn Nets and the Milwaukee Bucks starting things off, and you got Dallas and Sacramento underway too, Phoenix and the Clippers. These are all games happening before you eat dinner, and I think it's a fantastic deal. The month of August is usually one of the months you just take vacation. If you're a sports broadcaster, get geared up for football season. Now, every single day you have to be engaged, almost every single hour of the day, you have to keep an eye on things. Major League Baseball the same way, watching all those scores. Robert's probably keeping a close eye on his Colorado Rockies as they look to continue their great run of pitching, one of the best teams in terms of ERA right now. So rather than dwell on the negative, and there's certainly a ton of things you could be negative about at this moment, there's just so much good as well. There are 3 postponed games with the Phillies, Yankees, St. Louis, Detroit, the Phillies, and the Miami Marlins, but so many others going on right now that, quite frankly, I feel more compelled to talk about those than the ramifications that I don't even know if people in the league office know right now, if I'm being honest. I don't know if they know the ramifications of things. Robert, you watched some of the Canes yesterday. What's the percentage chance you're going to keep an eye on them tonight?
Once again, it's like 0%.
Oh, come on.
I didn't watch them yesterday. I helped you find a stream for them. It was pulled up on my computer for half a second, and then I went right back to basketball.
Oh, goodness. It's going to be a great game tonight. The Rangers, they're going to bring some urgency. I just hope the Hurricanes come out and punch them right in the mouth, and the Rangers, they start thinking about tee times tomorrow, and they're not worried about anything else. You just take away their will to win right out of the gate. Because if they win tonight, if the Rangers win Game 3, whole new series. It's a whole new series, even though this isn't the traditional home ice give and take where you have your first two at home and then things transition to another rink. I do believe in momentum. And if the Rangers win tonight, the nerves are going to set in. I don't know if I'll be wearing my Bunch of Jerks t-shirt tomorrow the way that I'm wearing it right now. Okay. I've got some information, been making some calls over the last day, taking some calls, learning some things that might be of interest for Appalachian State football fans, and heck, maybe even Carolina Panthers football fans as well. But in addition to that, college football coaches, they need to stop posing as medical experts. I'll tell you why next on The Drive.
Yes, Josh Graham has opinions.
That's right.
And yes, he's got attitude.
That's correct.
And that's exactly why you love him.
You wish I loved you that much.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
If you were listening to this, and you're going to watch the Carolina Hurricanes face the New York Rangers tonight, 8 o'clock, odds are you will not be seeing our next guest, because you're going to be watching Mike Maniscalco, Shane Willis, Abby Labar, Tripp Tracy on Fox Sports Carolinas, but somebody who knows quite a bit about the Carolinas and everything else hockey, of course, is our good friend John Forslin from NBC Sports. He's going to be on the call NBCSN tonight for Rangers Canes. Before we get into what's happened through the first two games and some of the larger context for the Hurricanes, let's just get through a couple of housekeeping notes first. What changes do you expect for tonight's Game 3?
I think there's a possibility that the Canes will change goalies, believe it or not. I think the schedule is a little bit arduous, and I think they have the luxury of having two guys available, and there may be a thought in place here, Josh, that they might have had James Reimer play this game anyway, based on the fact that this will set up a three-game and four-night scenario, and then have Mrazek fresh if need be for game number four. And Reimer was very good in their training camp, very good in the exhibition game, so I think they have a lot of confidence in him. So I'm not saying that he is. I'm saying I think it's a possibility. There's really no other reason other than an injury or an illness this morning to change anything with the Hurricanes lineup the way they played.
And as for the New York Rangers, a big question is what they're going to do in goal as they're dealing with injuries. And, of course, Henrik Lundqvist, I mean, he's a future Hall of Famer, but you usually see goaltending changes to try and spark teams, even in the playoffs.
Well, you normally do, and in this circumstance, with no fans in a, you know, kind of a generic, or if you want to call it organic atmosphere, what you have. And so coaches can only do a few things. Depending on who the home team is, a coach will get the last change. That might be one thing that could affect the game. The other thing would be lineup changes. And the most prominent lineup change you can make in hockey is to flip the goalie. And with the Rangers, they had every notion you can imagine to start the series with Igor Shesterkin, the flashing rookie, who went 10-2 in 12 starts, you know, starting in the beginning of January, became the number one goalie. But he has a nagging injury. It's not an illness. It is an injury. I do know that. And it's a situation that I think he could play. But given his age and his development, I don't think they want to push it to make it a situation that could become, you know, really damaging for him down the road. So if he wasn't fit to play yesterday, I don't think he plays tonight. But I do think the Rangers will probably change and go to Alexander Georgiev, who is their third goalie and equally played as well. Probably played better than Lundqvist during the regular season. And, you know, at the same type of level at times as young Shesterkin.
It is John Forslin with us here, NBC Sports. Tonight, it's Hurricanes-Rangers Game 3. And for those who don't know, John, you are in Toronto broadcasting games every single day for NBC. Many of the local regional broadcasts, they're doing it from their home arenas. They're doing it from studios because you don't want to have a ton of people in the bubble, or else it defeats kind of the purpose of the bubble. But since you're in there, how have expectations met reality for what exactly it looks like? Paint me the picture.
Well, it's absolutely remarkable. I mean, what the NHL has done here, both in Toronto and in Edmonton, is really off the charts. Every consideration, every detail has been thought about long and hard. You know, things aren't ideal, like the ice conditions. People are starting to complain about that. I mean, the one sheet of ice is getting, you know, brutalized with all these games. That's going to get better as the tournament goes along and the teams thin out. But the accommodations are outstanding. The compounds that they've created, there's options for the players to get around and experience a few restaurants within the compound, not too many, but enough. They have their own sequestered floors where they have every luxury you can imagine. They're spending time together, which I think they really enjoy based on the fact that they've been separated for so long and the season went on pause in March. And, you know, as national rights holders, we're here with them. We're in the same hotel. We go through the same situations and protocols every day. The best thing about it is the amount of testing. Millions and millions of dollars. I think it's going to exceed $80 million will be spent by the National Hockey League on testing alone. I get tested every day, and it's just part of your ritual. You get up in the morning, you go and you get tested, and you're cleared, and then you can work. And your temperature gets checked before you leave the hotel, and that's the only way you're allowed out. And so it's locked tight. I think the key was getting the players here after the two-week training camps and all the markets. They successfully did that, and that sets up this. So a tip of the cap to Gary Bettman and Donald Fair, who is the head of the Players Association. They worked together. They put this plan in place, and they also extended a collective bargaining agreement, which will now go for another 6 years. So I think hockey of the four majors is in a better position, believe it or not. And I think they've thought of a lot of things ahead of time, and they also figured out their labor situation with their players, which you'll see with baseball. I think there's some danger on the horizon with that. Football, I think there's going to be some danger. I think basketball might be okay. But hockey had a situation that they had to address. They reached a compromise with the players, and now this tournament kind of links all of that together. So a good job by them.
John Forslund with us here on Sports Hub Dryad. Last year, I remember when Andrei Svechnikov stepped into the playoffs and scored a pair of goals. The conversation surrounded the 19-year-old being, hey, this is what the future could look like. And then he has a hat trick. Yesterday, almost wanted to say 2 days ago, but quick turnaround. Sebastian Aho, 17 playoff games, 17 playoff points. Are we at the point where these guys are stars right now in a national context, or is it still premature to say that?
No, they're stars now, and they're both going to be superstars. And I wouldn't say that about anybody unless I really believed it. I think Andrei Svechnikov, the sky is the limit for this player. Because of a couple of things. Obviously, he's gifted, okay? He's a gifted athlete, he's second overall pick, tremendous skills, but his work ethic matches his talent. And when work ethic matches talent, you have the ability to become a consistent superstar with greatness, because consistency and greatness go together no matter what you do. If you're consistent, it's the same thing every day, you're on your way. And if you look at Sidney Crosby, the way he's played throughout time is that he has managed to put his work ethic and his diligence side by side with his skill set, and look what you have. You have a Hall of Famer. The same can be said for Ovechkin. The same can be said for a lot of these players who will be in the Hall of Fame who are playing today. Svechnikov is the same type of player. Sebastian Aho is too. Sebastian Aho, Josh, sometimes gets overlooked because he's got this boyhood charm about him. He's got the impish features, and you say to yourself, geez, he's probably a really highly skilled guy, but you don't see the burn, you don't see the work that he puts in, because in my time with the team, I was able to see that on a daily basis. So I think the world of both of those two young men, one guy's 23, one guy's 20. The Hurricanes are going to be in a great position moving forward, unless there's some type of contractual issue with either one of these guys, but these are the two centerpieces moving forward. And you can rest on these players for at least 10 years, and in Svechnikov's case, probably another 15 years. So we're talking about franchise ability here, and what you see is what you get. And they're off to a tremendous start in this tournament, and they should be able to get it done tonight and close out the Rangers, I believe.
Real quick, John, how many games have you broadcast in the last 3 days?
Did two Saturday, did one Sunday, did two yesterday. That's five. I have one tonight. Going again tomorrow. Yeah, so it'll be seven or eight games by the time we hit Thursday.
The last time you broadcasted...
That's going to be the case.
The last time you broadcasted five NHL games in a three-day stretch was when?
Well, never. It's never happened. I've never done two NHL games in one day. I mean, who's done that?
How are your pipes holding
yesterday
up?
I'm doing fine, thank God. Yeah, I'm doing fine. Just the good thing about this bubble life is all you can do is do your job and go to bed. And so I do my job, and my job entails hours of prep in my room before I get to the rink. And I get to the rink and do the game, and then I just come back and rest and go to sleep. And so that's all you can do. There's really nothing else. And because of that, hopefully we're going to hold up, be healthy, get through this. I hope the fans appreciate what's happening, because I think the hockey's going to get better and better and better as we move along. But I'm prepared to be gone, and I've been told I may be gone for 2 months. It's a long time, and it is Groundhog Day at times, but I love what I do, and I'm looking forward to a long stay here in Toronto, and then the possibility of maybe going out to Edmonton.
Maybe when you're not doing national broadcast involving the Carolina Hurricanes, you don't pull out the hey, what do you say? But in a national context, is hey, what do you say completely retired?
In a national context, it might be. It's probably a conversation I need to have with some of my superiors if we move forward. There is some branding attached to it, and I think the league likes, because they do use it in some ads and things of that nature. So if it plays out okay for everybody, maybe we get to it. But that's hockey, baby, might show up. I don't think that harms anybody. What you want to worry about in a national game is any type of bias, and you have to be completely down the middle. In this day of social media, you're going to hear from fan bases no matter what. And a lot of the games that I do involve, you know, real healthy fan bases that have been that way for a long time. So when you're doing a national game on a Saturday night, which we did going into the Pittsburgh market, and we set a record, over 2.5 million people watched that game at one point during the game, and it's on NBC, you can't show any bias, because those fans will eat you alive, and you have to be respectful of that. So for that reason, that's where it is. We'll see where it goes. If I end up somewhere else, then maybe it gets attached to that new team. My wish, of course, is that I could continue with the Hurricanes, but it doesn't look that way. But I do miss it. I do miss my time with the team. My heart is there. I should still be there, but I'm not, Josh. So we're just going to look forward, and instead of looking in the rearview mirror.
Last thing for John Forslund. NBC Sports tonight on the call for Canes Rangers game 3. Baseball. Usually we catch up talking about baseball. I've been very cautious talking about that sport on this show because, you know, you just don't really know the state of things right now, and it's really tough. I'm never going to pretend to be epidemiologist on the radio or pretend to know where we're headed with a lot of these things. But when you're trying to follow your beloved Red Sox, even as busy as you are, how much confidence do you have that the sport's going to be able to continue like this?
Zero. I don't know how they're doing it. I just think there's too much cross-pollination. There are too many risks involved. It's like playing a game of Russian roulette. I mean, you're taking these guys and you're making them move from city to city. And the more contact you have with people who are not sequestered, the worse it's going to be. And if you get out in that environment like baseball is, going from park to park, there's absolutely no way to do it as well as the bubble sports are doing. So basketball and hockey are doing it correctly. And even with that being said, it's still a risk, because you're coming in contact with the general public at some point. There are even various degrees of people that have been cleared to work in areas of the arena when we get over there. It's all based on a credential. My credential allows me to go to various places. the teams are allowed to go where they have to go, and that's the top-end credential. And then there's people who work in the building, and they're doing food service and things like that, but they're not able to access the areas that we are. I hope they're doing that in baseball. I'm not 100% sure they are. And then you hear stories about how they're testing and all this. There seems to be, again, some distrust between the players and Major League Baseball. That's the key. The union has to agree with the commissioner. And if everybody isn't on the same page, you're going to have breakdown. And I think baseball has been one breakdown after another, and that's just too bad. You look at the Blue Jays and what they're doing to these poor kids. I mean, they're just nomads. They don't even have a home. So I don't even understand from a humane standpoint. I don't think that's a reach to say that. I mean, these guys are already, the pay scale has been cut. The season's been cut. The minor league system has been destroyed. And they're taking this small group of players of the Toronto Blue Jays because they can't access their home park and just moving them around and making them sit in a city for a weekend because, they couldn't play. And then, at some point they're going to Buffalo to play their home games. It just seems like a clown show to me. And it's unfortunate as a baseball fan. I don't like to see it.
John, it's good to hear your voice. I look forward to hearing it on these NBC broadcasts. Keep up the great work. Stay safe. And oh, yeah. Warm tea, honey, and maybe a little bit of lemon. It's a good pro tip to keep the voices where it needs to be.
You got it. You got it, Josh.
There he is. It's weird to say the former voice of the Carolina Hurricanes for Fox Sports Carolinas. Hopefully that changes after the playoffs. But as John said, not really feeling optimistic about that. So I have to say NBC Sports, John Forslund, ahead of Canes Rangers. 8 o'clock tonight. We're looking forward to that. We're also looking forward to the start of football. Teams are already in fall camp. And early returns show us there are some things that need to be worked out. I'll explain next on The Drive. We're going to be joined by Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News in just a couple of minutes. We've got an NFL trading card war to do today. There is breaking news out of Major League Baseball, because of course there is. I'm a fan of the Orioles, and last week was kind of strange when they were getting set to play the Marlins. We learned about all these positive deaths. They didn't know if they were going to fly into Miami. Then they do, and then they're sent right back. They didn't know who they were going to play next. The Phillies then had their games postponed, so the Yankees said, all right, we'll play the Orioles. And they played a doubleheader, and I guess as much as things are different, so much more remains the same. The Orioles kept losing games to the Yankees. I think they've lost 18 in a row now. But who's counting? Rock Kabatko, who's covered the Orioles for a very long time, just put out this statement. The Orioles, they're set to play the Yankees, or should be set to play the Marlins again tonight. Is it gonna happen? This from Major League Baseball. The start of tonight's game between the host Orioles and the Miami Marlins at Camden Yards may be delayed as we await the final test results, clearing the Marlins to resume play. Wait, what? It is, let me check my watch, 30 seconds past 4:32 in the afternoon, and they don't have the test back necessary to say whether or not the Marlins can play the Orioles tonight? I'll steal John Forslund's words last hour. Clown show. We're being joined now by Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News. And there are a lot of things I want to talk to you about, Mike, but one of these things that bothers me on social media, the idea that the media raising safety concerns about sports in the age of coronavirus means they're rooting against sports somehow. And I think we see that in other varying degrees as well. As we see this Pac-12 unity statement that was put out over the weekend where some of these players just don't want to play enough because they're making a lot of these demands. Now, putting that aside, I don't want to have the conversation, how seriously should we take the players and, should they get NIL and all these things, because a lot of that is overdue and it's going to happen whether we like it or not. But how reasonable or unreasonable did you find their demands to be?
I thought that asking for post-college playing career medical coverage is something that's years overdue. I don't know what the window is, the proper window for someone with greater expertise in the medical field than I have, which is none. But I think that's long overdue. It's always been necessary, and as the money has piled up and coaches have made more and more money, it should have been spent. Some of that money should have been spent on that particular item, especially for football, because it does take such a physical toll on the body. But there are other athletes in other sports as well that suffer injuries that have lingering after effects and may need aftercare. And they may not always be in the best position in early career, early post-playing career, to have that covered. I mean, when I was laid off in between jobs in 1982, I got a medical plan that paid like $25 a month for it. I don't know what was covered, but I had to have something until I could get another job. And so guys who come out of college, and maybe it takes a little while for them to find their careers, or ladies who play in women's sports, they should have that coverage, absolutely, because you just don't know what you're going to need when you're done playing. But the idea that they need, or they should have 50% of the revenue in every sport go to the athletes, I found that to be ludicrous.
What athletes specifically, and what does that do to women's sports in Title IX?
Here's the thing. They said all of them. Well, that's okay, because in Title IX, the women's sports that don't generate a lot of revenue, you get half of that. So they don't care that women's field hockey players wouldn't get much. It's not their problem. They get half of football take. They're fine.
But it is that money that funds women's sports, no?
I'm sorry?
The money, the revenue that college sports do create that do not go to the players right now does fund women's sports, no?
A lot of it, yes, absolutely. It also helps fund facility expansion and high salaries for coaches and all the rest of that. It all goes into that sort of pile, and the players are saying that each individual sport you should get 50% of the revenue, and obviously it's a much better deal for them than it is for the men's golf team. I found that to be rather preposterous. What bothered me about the whole thing was how, and maybe you don't want, like, this may be entering into the part of conversation you don't want to have, but the whole, I mean, the media went scrambling over their skis to get this story, and without any idea how much support it had. And, I think in one way, the support of the players was quantified with how many athletes in Pac-12 programs liked the post. I mean, do you realize how little effort it takes to like a post? I mean, Josh, I could do 12 while we're talking.
Yeah.
That's nothing. When it comes down to it, are 400 willing to walk out of their football season? And I would bet a lot. I'm not a gambler, and I don't gamble on sports, but I'd bet a lot that there's not 1,200 people, or there's not 600, 400 people, players ready to walk out of their football season.
There isn't, and I think Dave Doran, he even said it earlier today. There were some things he said that he probably wishes he had back, but he did say, hey, no, not one athlete has communicated to me that he wants to opt out of the season. They are all hungry to get into the building, and I've texted college coaches off the record seeing if that is the case at other places, and they all have told me, yeah, they're in the building, no one's opting out, they want to play ball, they're tired of sitting in their home. And again, it doesn't really feed this idea, you're right, that a lot of the media put out there, hey, there's going to be this mass revolt in the Pac-12 and athletes, they're going to opt out. But similar to the way I'm bothered by a faction of the media being criticized for saying they don't love sports enough if they're raising concerns about the safety of having them, I do think there's other media out there that doesn't understand the NCAA, that doesn't want the NCAA to exist, and has that agenda, unlike us who grew up on college sports and loves college basketball and loves college football. And seeing this idea, I'm interested in what you make of this, and I want you to cut through the crap for me. The Power Five potentially just separating itself from the rest of FBS or Division One, whatever you want to call it. How plausible is it?
Well, I think that the question that I keep asking for the people who keep pumping that, I guess it's a good, it must be a click machine, right? Because they're guys who do what I do that just keep pumping that concept, like, so hard, okay? And so I'm just assuming now, and I, of course, I would never write it because I think it's preposterous, but it must be just a click machine because they keep going with it. And I wrote an article when Mark Cuban was on a Pittsburgh radio station early in the pandemic, and Mark Cuban advocated the idea of separating. And his idea was separate and then go hook up with a private equity firm and let them fund all the things I talk about. Where would they get the money to pay the new staff and the new office building and all the rest of that for their separate NCAA? Hook up with private equity. That works so great for the newspaper business. So, yeah, let's do that. But that was his idea. So when I asked a simple question, and no one has ever been able to come up with an answer. What do the Power Five get if they do this? What is the bonus for separating from the NCAA? Because the reality is, the things that people don't like about the NCAA, the rules, how they're enforced, those kinds of things, the Power Five are the people behind the rules. That's who does it. They are the autonomy conferences. Autonomy means they make their own rules, and that's how it works. And so, what do they get by separating? I don't see what they get, and no one's been able to answer that question. And I am dying for someone to at least give me a response of some sort, even if it's something that I can knock down like I'm Dikembe Mutombo. Give me something to work with. No one comes up with anything. Now, here's what they lose, okay? The first thing they lose is the NCAA tournament. They can have their own basketball tournament, sure. The NCAA tournament, the college basketball is extremely popular, much more popular than people think. But it's not even a fraction as popular as the NCAA tournament is. The NCAA tournament is multitudes more popular than college basketball. And I know they're kind of in... But, like, if you separate the two, I mean, the NCAA tournament is worth $1 billion for 3 weeks. 3 weeks. The Power Five understand math. They understand that, yeah, they could go off and have their own tournament, and they would get the full cut of whatever it would be, but it wouldn't be worth the same money, even though they control all the money. It wouldn't be worth the same amount of money to them. So they lose that. They lose the liability. Like, when somebody sues college sports, you know who they sue? They sue the NCAA. Mainly they sue the NCAA because the NCAA tournament makes so much money and they can go after that. But that's who they sue. If you're the Power Five and somebody sues college sports, you know who they're suing now? They're suing you. So you lose that. And then you lose the efficiency, years of understanding and sweat equity and all that goes into running championships. Nobody ever says the NCAA doesn't do that great. So you lose all that because they're all there in Indianapolis. And maybe you could hire away some of the same people, but they can't necessarily bring all the same synergies. We've seen people try to recreate circumstances by hiring the same people. Remember when the Cleveland Browns came back after the Ravens thing and they hired all the San Francisco 49ers people because that must be how it works. Well, they weren't able to get Bill Walsh, so they just hired all the front office, and they still stink.
Using an outdated example. I mean, you see with Bill Belichick, I mean, hey, maybe that's the more modern one. They're doing the same exact thing. Hey, maybe we'll get Bill Belichick by hiring Charlie Weiss.
Yes, but they lose all of that. And so I've not seen anything that they gain. There's this fantasy on the part of Twitter users, sports fans, that if you broke away from the NCAA, now you'd have all new rules and they'd all be better enforced, when in fact, again, the Power Five has the loudest voice in the room in terms of making those rules and making sure they're enforced in the way they want them to be.
He's on Twitter, at TSM Mike. Shoot him a follow, the Hall of Fame sports writer from the Sporting News. Also great at recommending movies. I got good news for you. I watched In the Heat of the Night with Sidney Poitier. Just tremendous.
from decades ago. You're right. It doesn't really seem like it was made, I think, in either 67 or 68, over 50 years ago. Give me another movie. Give me something else I need to watch.
Yeah, you know, my wife and I have been doing more TV than movies, but the last movie we watched, and it was very good, is a movie called Miss Juneteenth, an independent film that we saw on demand. I think it was on, or maybe we saw it on, maybe we bought it off Amazon, I'm not sure which, but it was a very good movie, and worthy of your 95 minutes or so. Very good performances, neat little story. I really enjoyed it.
All right, Miss Juneteenth. That's the next thing I got to keep an eye on. It's almost like, it's not a book club, but this is like the Sports Hub Triad movie club where Mike DeCourcy, every time he visits with us, tells us a movie he's seen lately, maybe gives us a brief review on it. Maybe sometime soon we're going to be talking about hopefully a vaccine and things going well and college basketball getting set and ready to go. We could talk some hoops and movies next time. Thanks for doing this, Mike.
You bet, Josh. Always a pleasure.
There you go. On Twitter, at TSN Mike. Just one of the best doing it. And a lot of good perspective right there. If the Carolina Hurricanes want to eliminate drama, they want to make sure they beat the New York Rangers. Tonight is the night. It's tonight. And I'll tell you why next.
The Drive with Josh Graham.
He's confident, smart, witty, vicious, brutal, vindictive, a monster.
This is an evil man.
Maybe, but he knows his sports. Back to The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
It is time for our NFL trading card war. Robert comes up with five different superlatives, categories that we need to place players into out of a trading card pack consisting of 12 cards that we don't see ahead of time, and we have to try and position players in that pack of cards into those superlatives. We argue our cases. Best of five wins the war. So it's a combination of the nostalgia felt when you open up a pack of trading cards and the NFL and senior year superlatives. I forget, Robert, did you have a senior year superlative?
Class clown.
Oh, that's right. Class clown. I was best smile because I had my front tooth knocked out with a BB gun. And after braces, I had one of those flipper things that had a tooth in the front that I had to take out when I eat. So my classmates were really nice to do best smile. And once they voted me that, they said you had to do the picture smiling without your front tooth. So there you have it. So it's combining a lot of things together. I also love playing the trading card game War, or just the regular deck of cards playing War with each other. It's a good way to pass time. Anyway, play the imaging.
This means war!
Oh, you're a tough little guy, aren't you?
This means war!
Hey, it's cool, it's cool!
This means war!
What? Does it have to? Can it mean something else?
Okay, you dirtbags! This means war!
Finish him!
Alright, open your pack of cards. Alright. Taking a look at these real quick. Got one of these really like heavy hologram like cards. Chris Goblin from the Bucks. Alright. Here are the five categories while we're trying to think where to put them. Most likely to remodel their own home, to do it by themselves. Most likely to own a bust of themselves. Most likely, or I guess the best player to play on the moon. So a player that would be really good playing on the moon. Most likely to survive a zombie apocalypse. And most likely to walk around in the woods barefoot. Robert, do you want to start or should I?
Go for it.
All right. Most likely to remodel their own home by themselves. I'm going with Miles Jack. The guy is ripped. He's a physical freak. He has a tool in his name. Miles Jack is my choice.
What exactly are you going to be remodeling at your house with a jack? Either
I just
way,
thought it was a good line.
Either way, I'm going to lay down Joey Bosa. He's the the cliche work pail type player. He is also jacked. He's also a big human being. Spent a lot of time outside as a young kid, so I'm going to assume that he would be good at remodeling, good with his hands. So I raised Joey Bosa.
I don't know. I think Joey Bosa, he's younger than Miles Jack. He's a year out of the league. He strikes me as somebody who's a bit bro-ish, and I don't really picture bros as being somebody who remodels their homes and especially does it by themselves. I do see a lot of those traits in Miles Jack, who was a little bit of a do-it-all type at UCLA. They had him at running back, and they had him at linebacker, so the versatility there tells me this is a guy who's willing to get the job done no matter what it takes to do so.
You don't know a lot of bros, do you? If you had a 24-pack of beer and six frat guys, you could get just about any project done you wanted to, as long as there was beer. I'll give you the Miles Jack, though. That's fine. I'll give you the Miles Jack.
Miles Jack, I'm off to a 1-0 lead. Most likely to own a bust of themselves. Who do you got?
Cam Newton.
Oh, wow.
I don't have to say anything. I'm assuming he does have a bust of himself, probably from the shoulders up, not just the noggin, but Cam Newton.
You're going to win this one, but I had Marcus Peters.
I could see him having a... He's more of a shoe guy than a bust guy.
I said I'm not done yet.
All right, keep going.
I said I'm not done yet. Marcus Peters. He, big personality. The positions you normally see personality, it's wide receiver and corner. Rarely do you see it at quarterback. Cam's an exception to that. It's the rare mix of the fame that comes with being an NFL starting quarterback and MVP, but also someone who has interest in entertainment and is actually really good at the entertaining, has a personality that you want to actually watch and see and hear from. So we're tied at one apiece. Best player on the moon. I'm going with Bradley Chubb. NC State, he was awesome. Local appeal, top five pick. The Broncos, they're the closest team in the league to playing on the moon. Like, you're talking about high altitude. And if that's not enough of an argument, playing in high altitude, I will submit that his Twitter handle is at astronaut. I'm not kidding. At astronaut is Bradley Chubb. Good luck beating me here.
I'm going to go Russell Wilson because I think he's a better player than Bradley Chubb is on the planet or the moon. I could have picked Josh Dobbs here, even though just because he's a rocket scientist, but that would not make him the best player on the moon. You think Russell Wilson's hard to tackle in real life? Imagine him jumping literally 15 feet over you on the moon. I don't know what else to say.
I'm going to give it to me just because... Mine has local appeal because Bradley Chubb went to NC State.
This is the dumbest game we've ever played.
And Russell Wilson went to Wisconsin.
You really want to win this bad, don't
so
you?
Russell Wilson.
You can have it. It's okay. This game is meaningless to me. That's fine. Take it.
You know he is a better player, so you can have it. But I do have the local appeal in Bradley Chubb that you don't have.
It's all good.
Wilson.
You're 2-1. Here we go.
Game's already under appeal. Most likely to survive a zombie apocalypse. I got Julio Jones. The guy, I mean, is just a monster. I don't think I need to say anything more than that. What else do you have?
Julio Jones has more fumbles in his career against the Saints than he does the touchdowns. If he drops something during the zombie apocalypse, you can't go back and get it. I'm raising you Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald is just a beast of a man. You give him a riot shield, you give him some armor, and I feel like he could just plow through an entire... crowd of zombies.
Yeah, it's a lot better than mine. It is. I love the stats you're bringing up about specifically against the Saints. More fumbles. If he fumbles a loaf of bread, he's going to get caught in the zombie apocalypse Walking Dead style. That probably was an episode of The Walking Dead. I wouldn't know. I haven't watched it. Julio Jones dropping a loaf of bread, a rye, if you will, and that ending the Atlanta Falcons wide receiver the way that they blew a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl, in case you forgot. All right, we're tied 2-2. It's the last one here. Most likely to walk around in the woods barefoot. I've got CD Lamb. Excellent footwork. And here's the thing. Anybody who's lived in the woods, and I have, I grew up in the woods, walking around out there. If you have a gravel parking lot, shouts to you, or a gravel driveway, you need to have very specific footwork to get through. You know what I'm talking about, where you're tiptoeing through. That's the way that CD played at Oklahoma last year. It's what makes him great. He always knows where he's at. He's not going to step on any pine cones, Robert. Not CD Lamb. So I think wide receiver's where you want to go, and CD Lamb's the guy.
I'm going to lay down Dallas Goedert. Mostly because I think he's actually been in the woods without his shoes on. And it doesn't matter if he steps on a pine cone. That dude's doesn't have baby feet. He's got grown man feet with calluses on the bottom of them. He could probably bench press with the bottom of his shoes if he wanted to. Dallas Goedert, he's got a redneck name. He's got a redneck lifestyle. I feel like he could do the outdoors better than most.
I feel like this game needs to be put up to the audience. 336-777-1600. Dallas Goedert, CD Lamb, who is most likely to walk around in the woods, or better, to walk around in the woods? 777-1600 is the number.
If you put this up to the audience, I would have won on the fourth card, because there's no way they would have agreed that Bradley Chubb would be a better player on the moon than Russell Wilson.
Astronaut, high altitude. I feel like I gave better reasons.
What, I should have just picked Laramie Tunzel because he's also higher than most players?
Did you have Laramie Tunzel?
No, but I did last week. I didn't have Josh Dobbs either, but...
Yeah, I think you're being... I should have played Greedy Williams right now because it sounds like you're being greedy.
I am not being greedy. No one has ever won this game with more than 4 points.
This is the most controversial finish to this game. I'm going to leave it to the phone callers to decide at 777-1600 who ended up winning this NFL trading card war between me and Robert. That's what I'm going to do. Because I liked my arguments for CD Lamb. I think your arguments were good as well. You grew up in the woods, I think, at some point, didn't you?
Yeah, for the first 3 years of my life, I was raised by wolves, and we stayed mostly in the woods, also a cave by a stream, so...
Got it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you've been to my home or where I grew up outside the city of Wake Forest in Youngsville, north of Raleigh, but it's a wooded area, and I didn't really have neighbors that I knew that well. Just spent a lot of time outside and in the woods, so I know all about trying to avoid the pine cones and the snake every now and then. I know it probably doesn't sound that way in my voice, but that's what I grew up with. All right, we've had a big show so far today. John Forslund joined us. Hall of Fame sports writer Mike DeCourcy was with us. If you missed any of that, it's going to be in the Best of podcast in about a half hour. However, and wherever you're listening, we appreciate that. Tomorrow, Wake Forest Director of Athletics John Curry is going to be with us. So there's a lot that we need to get to with John, but... Let's go to the phone calls, and I'm scared because we have a couple here, and what if they split? Okay, let's go to Dustin in Winston-Salem. Dustin, who won the NFL trading card war between me and Robert?
I don't think it was you, Josh. I don't think a wide receiver is going anywhere barefoot without someone carrying them around.
All right, thanks for the call, Dustin. Let's go to Mike in Burlington. Mike in Burlington, who won the NFL trading card war?
Robert.
Short and sweet. Thanks so much. All right, Robert, congratulations. You've won for, I think, the fourth consecutive week. That reminds me. Are you going to take a look at what's happening tonight as the Hurricanes look to follow the hat trick scored by...
Mr. Svechnikov!
Probably not.
8 o'clock tonight, man. 8 o'clock tonight.
I got some big plans. I'm going to be a little busy tonight.
What are you doing?
Having like a little birthday party thing at my dad's.
That does sound like a lot of fun.
Should be fun.
All right. So, a lot to get to, again, with John Curry. You got Notre Dame facing Wake Forest in Charlotte. As of right now, it's still set for September 26th. The adjusted schedule, Notre Dame being in the league. I mean, just so much that a lot of people care about right now. My Apple Watch is talking to me right now.
What's it saying?
I think it's saying, man, this radio show kicks ass, dude.
I wish my watch talked to me.
Keep going. Keep doing what you're doing right here. Congratulations on another win in the NFL trading card war.
Thank you. Thank you. You're far too kind.
I don't think you're ever going to let me win this thing.
It's not that I don't let you win. I just think that I'm better at lying about players' abilities than you are.
Yeah, Deebo Samuel. I had him in my pack.
So you could have used the name Deebo as like he would Deebo the zombies.
I was thinking about that.
The Deebo is always a good play just for the namesake.
It is. Chris Godwin, I didn't know anywhere I could put him. Adam Thielen, like, it's not who can catch the most useless amount of passes.
See, I would have...
It's him or Christian McCaffrey that lead the NFL in most useless passes caught.
Thielen, you could have put him as, like, would have remodeled his house, though. He's an undrafted guy. He's not unfamiliar to working. And I would have bought that way more than Miles Jack. But you got your tool reference in.
Noah Igbinogene.
I wouldn't know where to put him.
I just wanted to put that out there because I spent a long time trying to pronounce his name. So you might as well do that. That's the thing when you learn how to pronounce someone's name. You always want to say it just to prove you got it.
Yep.
Like I remember when I first got the Navy football coach's names, his name down. Do you know the name of the Navy football coach, Robert?
Ken Niumatalolo or something like that?
Not far off. Ken Niumatalolo. Is his name, and I just butchered it. Ken Niumatalolo.
There you go.
There you go, right there.
I remember we used to do a skit on or segment on your show in Greenville whenever EC would play BYU. We would get...
How do you spell their names?
Yeah. And we would try to spelling bee some of those dudes' names. That was rough.
I mean, I always love the signing day spelling bee. It's one of my favorite bits that we do. There were a lot of annual bits that we have to look forward to. Anyway, I didn't have anybody else. Tyler Johnson, the rookie out of Minnesota. I didn't have much use.
I had Golden Tate, so I was really hoping for like an adulterous theme. I really need to open my pack of cards first and then make the categories so I can make them all. I want to sweep, you know? Is that against the rules?
That's very much against the rules. Do you think Dave Doran deserves all the heat that he's getting today?
No, nobody ever deserves all the heat they're getting. Maybe R. Kelly, but nobody else.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, let's play that quote. Dave Doran, he's talking about... I asked him in his Zoom press conference today about the fact that many of the symptoms you look for heat illness are the same you're looking for COVID, and this is what he said.
And I don't mean this in a way where I'm not respecting COVID because there's so many precautions here for that. But I'm more concerned about heat illness and season-ending injuries than I am about a virus that in most cases in our age group of guys is 3 to 5 days, you know. And so there's been a ton of conversation about heat illness. We always talk about the guys on our team that are sickle cell positive because they're the ones that you most are concerned about when it comes to the heat.
So I've tried my best. Twitter isn't the place for contacts. It isn't. I thought what he said was newsworthy. So I'm getting a lot of NC State fans saying that on social media that I wasn't being fair to Dave Doran. But I've tried my very best to add the context in there because I do think the heat illness piece of this is being overlooked. It wasn't a gotcha question. It was me simply bringing up how this could be a potential roadblock that COVID presents that we're not accounting for over the next few weeks. If somebody is demonstrating these following symptoms, if somebody at practice this week for NC State, you look at him and you see he has headaches or high body temperature or fatigue or nausea or vomiting. According to the CDC, those are things you expect with heat illness. And Dave Doran's a smart guy. He's dealt with that, right? He has. But also, it's the same stuff that the CDC says that you should be looking for with COVID. So what do you do if somebody demonstrates those symptoms? Do you send them off into quarantine? Or do you throw them in an ice bath? Do you do both? I don't know. These are uncharted waters. That's why I thought it was a legitimate question. Robert, what do we got in Ticket to the House today?
From Charlotte's Web to arachnophobia, I've got you covered.
What's next on the drive?